Let's pretend I'm a judge. Okay, I've heard a case and I'm licensed by the UPU. I have to submit some documents. How do you think I'm going to submit those documents? In the documents that gives the UPU full jurisdiction of the paperwork. Their paperwork in a very specific order. They take a stamp. It has to be one whole stamp, one whole pound, or a euro, or any denomination, 100 units, making a pound, or a euro. And they stick it in the top right-hand corner of their paperwork. All right? That's now got value. It's got post office value because it's maritime law. And maritime law is things that have value. I've paid my value. But that's an open stamp, which means somebody can come along and peel it off and reuse it. I need to cancel the stamp. So by buying a stamp, which means I've handed over money, it's a commercial contract, I have to cancel that stamp, just like a post office stamp, when they stamp that stamp. Yeah? Post office stamp. So the way that I do that is that I am now the postmaster. I autograph my name at an angle across that stamp. Not sign, but autograph. That now makes me the postmaster of that document. Vessel's dock, that's a document. Okay? And I autograph this way. So I put my autograph here to take jurisdiction of everything above, including the stamp. So I've created value on this side of the paper. I now take the entire document. And on the other side, just like a letter, I put my autograph here. Now that is how a judge would submit their paperwork to the highest authority on our planet. When they see this, they know the game is over. They know the game is over. You are now submitting paperwork as judges are. So that means you're what? A judge. In control of what? Your vessel. Yeah? And the contents of your vessel, which are your words. And you know what maritime law is, because any paper is under maritime jurisdiction. And it's a vessel. And you've paid your dues. You've paid for your registration. Yeah? You've now given this piece of paper value, real money. You've paid real money for that. When you submit your documents this way, it automatically becomes federal law, because post office controls that, and he bought that from the post office. And since this is how judges submit their paperwork, you now become the postmaster, judge of your document. And this also makes you one of the most powerful carriers on the planet. Abraham Lincoln was what? A letter carrier. Makes you a letter carrier.
With your own signature across the stamp?
Yeah.
Autograph.
Autograph. Yeah, that is now federal.
Back and front.
And the back, you put your autograph across like that, as you would do an envelope.
At the top.
Yeah. The reason why that is, sorry, my friend, because if you remember, in the olden days, letters were scrolls. Yeah, and that would be come like that, and they would look at that, think, oh, that's from the king, King Mark, King Henry, whoever, and it would have your seal, it will have your autograph, and they will and have a look, and there it is. Oh, okay. That's how that works. The oldest system there is. Works brilliantly. Works to this day. All scrolls are like this, by the way. That's why when judges put their paperwork, it's in scroll form. You've seen it, haven't you?
Mm.
I've seen it.
Some of the old
yeah.
And is it
legal size paper?
Yes, this is going to be legal size paper. I don't know what legal size paper is, yeah, but let's stick with A4s, shall we?
The average one.
No, this is for camera. I don't know what notary paper is.
Standard paper is about, say, 10 inch, and legal size is just 2 inch long or something like that. Same width, but possibly.
Don't know. Don't know. But who gives a damn how big my piece of paper is because I've paid for it? All right? I've paid for it. I suppose there's just tricks that they play with this, yeah? Now, under maritime law, I have to bound this document, and if it's got 2-3 leaves on it, I have to bind it, just as it used to be in an old days, of a complete scroll. Because if you interfered with a scroll, they can see it's been interfered with, cut away. So I have to bind it in such a way that nobody can pull it apart, and if they do, it comes up as damaged pieces of transport, damaged pieces of cargo. And you get compensated for that, don't you? It's been interfered with. So, what you do is you bind it or fuse the paper together to make it legal. Or, as I do, I use brass stamps, so brass rivets. Okay? Somebody get me out a rivet, please. Can I have you standing up for me? Yep. That's definitely brass. Ridiculously simple, isn't it? That's how you always get these things working. Ridiculously simple. You bind the paperwork.
You want to see that, just the paper.
The paperwork is now bound. And that's maritime law now. That's a proper document. That's a proper document.
So can anyone just take it and bind it?
Do you need to bind it all the way around, or is it one enough?
No, it's just, this is for other piece of paper that's going to accompany it. This is just for the camera.
Yeah,
so this is how it's going to be in reality. It's going to be several pieces of paper. Or just one piece of paper. Yeah, so that would be your A4. And all you're doing is just bonding it. Yeah? Maritime law of bonding. And that's your document. And it's sealed. Anybody wants to interfere with it has to tear it. That means it's been interfered with. Okay? That's how you prepare your contracts. With the preparation of the contract, I don't care what language you use. I don't care what words you use. Long as you define your words. This is not Miller's teaching, because he has his own system. And that's what I'll be teaching you as well. But I want to make it clear to you. Long as you have defined your word, they are your words and your meaning put upon this paper. So there is no misinterpretation. So you add a dictionary with it. Bind the dictionary so nobody can interfere with that as well. You have now defined your own words, one word, one meaning. You've created it using the highest authority on the planet. And there is no misinterpretation. That's your contract. You've now created a contract. Yeah? And if I send you one of these things, and it hasn't got a dictionary, it's got multiple meanings. Under maritime law, what address have you got? Or readdress, shall we say, for simplistic language? No. You have. Because under maritime law, I have to define my words. How can I create closure without it? Yeah? So, if you're going to ask me for something, can you define the codes for me, please? Can you show me the titles in which you're titled to this sum of money? Can you create the dictionary that gives me one word, one meaning, so I can understand what the hell you're talking about? Because you're prosecuting me for the Cancer Act, 1939 Cancer Act, and you're prosecuting me under which word? Cure, which means to preserve cancer, then I should be prosecuted, shouldn't I? Saying that I'm going to preserve cancer. What other words is there, meaning of cancer? Yeah? Treat cancer. I'm going to treat the preservation of cancer. Is that what you're prosecuting me for? I'm all up for that. That is what you're prosecuting me for, isn't it? Or are you prosecuting me for something else? If it is, you bloody better tell me what it is. Because I'll tear this piece of paper to pieces. Does that make sense? Yeah? To create closure, you must add a dictionary to a contract. One word, one meaning. I know alarm bells are now starting to ring, and therefore this alarm bell is now quite musical to you probably, since you don't have any word definitions in your contract with the contractor. Yeah? Does that explain a whole heap of things? So how do you, on a personal, on a vocabulary level, carry the power of what I was talking about? The simplification of words. Knowing what you're speaking about. Because the judge is going to start flicking you, just like that square box I showed you. Every time he sees that, he'll flick. And he'll cause an interruption. He'll go like that on the desk. You'll get a piece of paper, thick piece of paper. You've seen it happen many times, yeah. Or the gravel. The gravel is a stamp, symbolic stamp of a postage stamp, yeah?
They don't have them in the UK courts, do they? I think they're only in the American courts, these gavels.
Yeah, gavels in the UK courts.
Let's not go over that. Okay. A gavel is an interruption. Yeah. And in the world of psychology, that's called a handshake interruption. He's causing an interruption. He's going like this purposely. Yeah? To interrupt you because you're in a frame of thought. You're in a frame of thought of seeing this at a particular angle. When he interrupts you, the angle changes. So you don't take jurisdiction of what you are talking about. This pointing that way. He's now got you pointing that way. I know your tricks, boys, girls.
Focus of attention.
Yeah? This is what he's doing. He's swapping jurisdiction. Don't you want to claim human rights? You are human. Define the word human for me.
Someone yeah? that cannot own property.
A monster cannot inherit his blood, cannot inherit wealth, and cannot inherit anything else?
No.
Equity. Yeah? That's the game they're playing. Your subconscious knows what human means. Do you remember in your days, if I can be so poetic, they used to make liveries of milk and bread and so on and so forth, until somebody came along and put the word DE in. Now you have delivery. I thought a DE means no livery. So you have no livery. Somebody did that in your history. And if you find out who that was, you'll find out who the corrupter of your language is. And he or she is usually sitting in the middle of their lodge. You would work out the rest. There are specific points in your history where your language is purposely corrupted, forced upon you. And I'll talk through about the corruption of language, how it takes place. If he was an Irishman, say, just at the turn of the century, and he spoke Gaelic with me, and I was the British Empire there, what would I do to him? What do you think I would do to him? I'd give him a chance, learn my language. I'll horsewhip him. I'll beat him. And if he refused, I'll behead him. That's all in history books. If his children speaks Gaelic, they are taken out and beaten.
Over a drum.
Yeah. If I went to Scotland and I found out that he was speaking Gaelic and Scottish people were speaking Gaelic and Welsh and so on and so forth, I'll do exactly the same thing. And if I came to Britain, and where I live in an area where a tribe used to live called a roding tribe. They all disappeared because they refused to speak the language. So it's not the bloody British that are doing this. Yeah? They refuse to take the language. What's important with the language is more profound than most people can imagine. And I give this analogy normally. Your operating system on a laptop, for example, usually runs on a free software. What's that called? A Ubuntu? What's the other one called? Linux? They're all near-perfect operating systems. They're near-perfect operating systems, and they are free. And they work seamlessly, and they work effortlessly. And they occupy only a small part of their memory to do that. It's uncorrupted. Other people come along, like Apple, and create a really good interface with it, make it very smooth, make it very palatable, easy to look at, aesthetic, and they make money from it, which is a good thing, is it not? Other people will come along, corrupt the very core of it, the very kernel, and it's called in computer language the kernel. They corrupt the very kernel of it, and they create an entire infrastructure repairing, constantly repairing that kernel. Do we know what that's called?
Microsoft.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah? It's what they did. They corrupted the very core of it.
Well, it's based around a pine cone, isn't it?
The kernel. When you corrupt something that works near perfect, you make a lot of money from it because you need to constantly fix it. Sounds like something? Like the pharmaceutical industry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Vaccines.
Anything else? What operates your operating system, your own CPU?
Pioneer
with
that.
Weetabix.
It's your words. The program is the words. It's the words. It's the words that move you from one jurisdiction to the other. It's the one that navigates you from one point to the other. Without that vocabulary, you will not be able to even get yourself up from the chair, as any hypnotist can tell you. Wake up, not awake, because that means go to sleep, no wake.
That explains why I've never been woken up yet, Renee. I'm still learning.
It's the language, folks. Once you remove these words from your vocabulary, you got your back, the vocabulary that puts your subconscious in operation. The vocabulary of, say, David. The vocabulary of, say, people that are in possession of their own thoughts. When Webster's Dictionary came out, what did Webster say? He said, the greatest crime I've ever committed was the bastardization of English, the English language. Those are his own words. When your country or any other country speaks a language that's not being uncorrupted, it usually means that language or that culture doesn't punish the truth. If you punish a child for telling the truth, it will learn to lie. And it will create an entire imaginary, illusionary world in which to navigate from one point to the other, through its parents, through its societies, constantly lying, flibbing. Fibbing, yeah, constantly fibbing, lying its way through life. But you have a language that does not punish. You get rewarded for telling the truth. The language becomes so refined that you're now speaking the facts as the facts. Does that make sense? You imagine a mother that doesn't punish a child for spilling milk or burning a house down, but rather is more concerned with how the child is or the baby is. Doesn't punish it. Oh, what have you done, sweetie? Oh, I've accidentally left the tap on and left the plug on. The house is entirely flooded. Well, okay, let's go and fix it, shall we? There's no punishment. But if you punish the child, it will learn to tell the lie. And the damage will be much greater. So you won't get to know about it when you come home. You get to hear about it when you go to bed. Does that make sense? And you can work your own way through how this works. You punish a child, you create a language that revolves around lying. So when they encountered languages that did not punish their children for telling the truth, they banned those languages. And the penalty for speaking those languages was death. As they did with the Gaelic people, as they did with the Asian people, as they did with the Hawaiians, as they did with most of America,